Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by a colleague of many years, a man who I've come to admire, among other things, for his efforts to help inform the rest of us about some issues that are not necessarily getting the attention they deserve, including a couple that we'll be talking about today. He's Peter Husey, the president of Geostrategic Analysis. He is also a senior fellow with the American Foreign Policy Council. He has been a consultant for the Air Force Association and a visiting fellow with the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. You can find his writings in lots of places, including at Human Events. He is always welcome here, not least, as I say, for his attention to matters, particularly in the space of nuclear deterrence, that most of the rest of us are simply not attending to as we should. Peter, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Oh, well, thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be talking with you.
I'd like to talk about, first and foremost, something you've recently written at the Gatestone Institute about the effort to promote this so-called Global Zero initiative. It seems as though this is something, of course, that President Obama has not just paid lip service to, but has, in his fashion, been kind of implementing, at least with respect to the atrophying of our nuclear forces. But what's the agenda here, Peter, and how does this square with certain strategic realities around the world?
Well, the piece I did, Frank, was I looked at, pick a number. There are 17,000 nuclear warheads in the world. How many are actually under arms control agreements? About a little over 3,000. So why do we keep concentrating on our part of the 3,000, which is about 1,550 plus or minus a couple hundred? And those are the ones under control, and yet we keep wanting to, we hear about going down from 1,500 to 1,000. But what about the other 14,000 in Pakistan, China, India, North Korea, none of which are under any control whatsoever? Now, it is true. We don't know the numbers of these weapons very well. We're guessing. The Chinese aren't transparent. Their plans are pretty opaque. And yes, it's tough to deal with those issues, but that's where the proliferation is happening. That's where the threats are, far more than what we have. So I'm fascinated by, when you look at the arms control agenda, it's always coming back to curtailing Americans' nuclear capability. And you ask what the agenda is, that's the agenda.
And you know, Peter, one of the things that was particularly striking, I know you were actively engaged, as were we, on the Iran deal. Some of the folks who were most prominent in promoting the arms deal, I'm thinking particularly of Joseph Cerincione at the Plowshares Fund and others like him, that have professed this interest in ridding the world of nuclear weapons. And here they are engaged in an activity that is assuredly going to increase the number, at least in Iran. So it does seem as though their focus, in fact, when all is said and done, has really been to disarm the United States, which is a pretty troubling thing, especially, as you point out, against the backdrop of what's happening with the Russians and the Chinese. The Russians, as I understand it, Peter, are actually well above the level they're supposed to have under the New START deal and their more modern capabilities across the board. Talk about that.
Well, because bomber weapons are counted one bomber, one weapon, you can have a lot more than 1550, which is the technical, you know, the agreed upon ceiling. We can be above that too. Mark Schneider of the National Institute of Public Policy thinks that the Russians, and this is also true of the Federation of American Scientists, which is a pretty liberal group, they think the Russian number may be somewhere between 2,200 and 2,500. It's hard to know because, again, like China, the only people guessing about China's nuclear warheads are us, and we're guessing. I mean, the community of China scholars, they're the minimizers. And there's those who try to take a more realistic view. I find it interesting is that the people in support of the Iran agreement, like Joe Cerincione said, the only reason we're modernizing our nukes is because we are using the Iranian threat of possibly having nuclear weapons. So they're figured, hey, if we can take that quote-unquote threat away by proving that the Iranians are nice guys and are not going to build nukes, then they can come back and say that America doesn't need to modernize our forces. That was in a press release they put out, which I thought was fascinating, the Plowshares Fund. But again, Frank, we've been dealing with this since the dawn of the Cold War and the dawn of the nuclear age, is that there are those people who think as Admiral Richard Meese, who was head of our STRATCOM for years, said, told me, he said, look, this idea that if we're nice guys and prove our mettle by taking the actions of restraint and reducing our nukes, that the other guys will follow suit, or at least will be persuaded to follow suit by others. He said it hasn't been borne out. And he wrote about this in an excellent article, and I think it was the ASW, Anti-Submarine Warfare magazine of the Navy.
You know, it reminds me of that old line by Harold Brown, and the former Secretary of Defense, that about in the Cold War, when we build, the Russians build, and when we stop building, they continue building. So it seems as though that's the kind of world we're in. Peter, let me turn to a couple of other questions quickly, because we're going to be out of time momentarily. The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, there's a move afoot by the administration to resuscitate it. Is that advisable?
Well, again, we're looking at the theory is that if China and North Korea can't test nuclear weapons, they won't build any. And you know the history of that is that most of the countries we know who become nuclear powers, they became nuclear powers and didn't do a long, extensive test program, which we mirror image. We think because we did it, they're going to do it. My view is it's beside the point.
Peter Husey is our guest with geostrategic analysis. And let me just ask you, Peter, if we don't modernize our forces, and this was, I think, a question both of platforms, that is to say delivery systems, as well as the weapons themselves, isn't it essentially inevitable that we will find ourselves obsolescing into pretty much comprehensive disarmament of these forces?
Yes, it's Clark Murdoch, a very top scholar, used to work in the House Armed Services Committee, has said as we will rush to obsolescence. And he's exactly right. Our systems are the oldest they've ever been in terms of our nuclear deterrent. It was built and modernized under Ronald Reagan. That's been 30 years to 35 years, depending on when you say we started. So that if we don't replace these things with, and if you're going to replace them, you might as well replace them with modernized things. We're not making them capable of hitting any more targets than we were before. They're not more accurate necessarily. They're just basically keeping them the same deterrent. If we don't, we're going to be out of business. And the Russians, as Mark Snyder points out, they will modernize their entire nuclear force by 2021 prior to the United States even deploying a single new missile, submarine, or bomber that is now planned for the next decade and a half, 2 decades.
Peter, lastly, you've been very, very keen, as I have, on addressing the threat to our electric grid, notably from electromagnetic pulse. There's been several important developments on that front. Talk about them, if you would.
Well, what the administration has proposed is that recognizing that the solar flares that could do EMP could be a disaster for our economy. That's the good news. The bad news is they propose to study it and analyze how we would react and how we would deal with it after the fact. I want to deal with it before the fact. We can protect the grid. As Senator Johnson in Wisconsin has said, he will bring a bill before the Senate, as a conservative Republican, he said, I'll be able to pay for the whole thing. That same bill is now going to be coming up in the House of Representatives next week.
This is the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act.
Yes. I don't understand why, if you're faced with this problem, you're talking about in the single digits of billions of dollars at most. You're talking about a one-time cost. It's going to save you billions in a normal, everyday electric utility deal. It's a good deal. And it protects you against catastrophic problem, which everybody recognizes could be from a nuclear warhead detonated above our land. The sun isn't deterrable. You can't call them up and say, hey, sun, don't send a solar flare over here. But it's inevitable. So you've got to protect against yourself. Plus, as you know, Ted Koppel came out with a book on cyber attacks on our grid. Well, do all three. Protect against the sun, protect against cyber.
All hazards.
The nuclear, all hazards.
Indeed.
And you know, the Wall Street Journal wrote what, a couple years ago that the Chinese had tried to hack the Eastern U.S. grid as kind of a test case of seeing what they could do. So it's not as if these threats are imagined. They are real. And it seems to me the height of irresponsibility not to do it.
Amen. Thank you so much, Peter, for the great work you do at Geostrategic Analysis and elsewhere. It's really valuable. We appreciate you coming on and hope you'll do it again soon. Next up, we'll talk with Gordon Chang about developments in China and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.